Dated 13 August 2017 at Wu Bing Jing Se. So let us now compose our mind, develop the sadha, the faith, then the virya, spiritual zeal, then mindfully we shall commence the puja. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Pho. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Pho. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Pho. Namo Quan Sin Pusa. Namo Quan Sin Pusa. Namo Quan Sin Pusa. Namo Pho Pusa. Namo Pho Pusa. Namo Pho Pusa. Arahaṃ sammā sambuddho bhagavā buddhaṃ bhagavantaṃ abhivādhemi. Svākhāto bhagavata dhammo dhammaṃ namasāmi. Supatipanno bhagavato sāvakasaṅgho saṅghaṃ namāmi. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhasa. Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Pānāti pātā viramani sikkhāpadaṃ samādhiyāmi. Ādinadāna viramani sikkhāpadaṃ samādhiyāmi. Kāmesu micchācārā viramani sikkhāpadaṃ samādhiyāmi. Musāvādā viramani sikkhāpadaṃ samādhiyāmi. Surāmeraya majjhapamādathāna viramani sikkhāpadaṃ samādhiyāmi. Sādhu, sādhu, sādhu. Okay, let us pay respect to Triple Gem. Buddhaṃ pujāmi. Dhammaṃ pujāmi. Sanghaṃ pujāmi. Okay, you all can be seated. Then, have you on the recorder, Miss Lee? Okay. Just relax body and mind, maintain some more attention, then we can start our lesson 54 of the Six Patria Platform Sutta. Let us turn to page 1, verse for opening the sutta. The unsurpassed, profound and wonderful Dhamma is difficult to encounter in hundreds of millions of aeons. I now see and hear it, receive and uphold it, and I vow to fathom the Tathagata's true meaning. Okay, then turn to page 272. We are at the page 272. Okay. Before we go into the sutta proper, there is something that I would like to maybe share with you all so that you all can understand. You see, there is a lot of controversy between Theravada Mahayana because there is some lack of understanding among cultivator and participant. So this aspect of the what they call misunderstanding or lack of understanding is due to division created by those who have not developed the understanding of the teaching. Like I used to explain, the Buddha Dhamma is the truth as taught by the Buddha. And his teaching is essentially the Dhamma. That's why we take refuge in the Buddha, then his teaching, which is the Dhamma. Then the enlightened disciple of the Buddha, which is the Sangha. So when you take refuge with the teaching, means you take refuge with the Dhamma, which is the truth itself. And this truth points towards enlightenment, like we went through the previous discussion, Dhamma sharing. The scripture, the Dhamma, is not the enlightenment. But these are truth that points towards enlightenment. If you understand its meaning, cultivate according to what the teaching tells you, then you can realize the enlightenment. Then when you have the enlightenment, there is no division. We are basically what the Buddha taught is the Dhamma. And the essence of the Buddhist teaching is just the Four Noble Truths. And these are common to all traditions, whether Theravada, Mahayana, or Vajrayana. But some vehicle, they expanded on their teaching. And when people don't understand, with their limited understanding, they comment from their own limited point of view. That's why it will lead to complication. But sometimes the other vehicle who expanded on the teaching, when the follower and those who share those teaching, they don't have the understanding or deep enough understanding, sometimes what they share may deviate to from the truth. But basically, they come from the same teaching, which is the Dhamma. How you expand from the teaching is, to me, not the issue. The main issue is, do you understand the teaching? When you understand the teaching, whatever the vehicle, you can understand how they come about. And whether the commentaries or those that has been shared is the truth or not. Without your own cultivation, without your own ability to investigate into all this through an understanding, there is no way you can understand them. So focus on the cultivation to realize the Dhamma. That is more important. Rather than holding on to your views and opinion, then create the division, unnecessary argument, misunderstanding, trying to be right, to protect that particular vehicle that you are may be associated with. So this is how the mind can create division, can create misunderstanding, leading to conflict, argument. And the egoic mind that do this is the mind that has delusion, self-delusion. These are understanding that can only come about through realization of the Dhamma. That's why in order to avoid all this, wherever we go, depend on the way place we are, you will come to an understanding that throughout my sharing, I approach it initially from the Theravada tradition, because most English educated students or people, they find it very difficult to learn Mahayana teaching. Well, Mahayana teaching is basically taught in Mandarin. Yeah. And without the understanding of Mandarin, it's very difficult to comprehend Mahayana teaching. It can be comprehended, but very difficult. So that is the reason why we have most English educated, they are with the Theravada. But it doesn't mean all English educated are with the Theravada. There are quite a number of Mandarin educated. They are also very strongly associated with Theravada Buddhism because they feel that it's more authentic. It is the teaching of the elders. That's why they call Thera, Theravada. Theras are the elders. The elders are the monks who had more than 20 years of monkhood. So they are called Theras. So vehicle of the elders. But originally when it started, they call it Hinayana, the smaller vehicle. Or the orthodox tradition. Orthodox means they limit their whatever teaching to what was recorded and what they believe to be the teaching. Whatever out of it, they just refuse to take it in, or they just chop it off. So like I explained before, there are pros and cons of what they do. Theravada teaching has its very beautiful advantage in the sense that it preserves the original teaching. And this original teaching that were preserved are very authentic, especially the Pali chanting. These are the words that came from the Buddha, like our puja chanting. Salutation to the Buddha, it has never changed. Then taking of refuge, renewing of the precepts, and the importance of precepts, all this never changed. Then even later on, all the various Pali chanting of the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, the various type of sutta, the fire sermon, it never changed, because these are passed down over the years via chanting. Chanting is a very good way of preserving the authenticity of the teaching. But the problem with Theravada is, as the year passed by after the enlightenment of the Buddha, all this explanation of the teaching or the sutta, they get defiled, or is no longer the true interpretation and the understanding. That's why they lose their potency to awaken living being. Unless you really have your cultivation from the past, or you have been diligent with your cultivation and your practice, then you may develop the understanding. Otherwise, most of the cultivator, they find it very difficult to understand the teaching, because most of it that is left over from the translation, because they were only committed to writing many hundred years later after the Buddha's passing away or parinibbana. Then after they were committed to writing again need interpretation or explanation, so they call it commentaries. So all this commentary came out, and there are many versions of the commentary, and then different teacher, different monk, they start to teach it differently. That's why it end up, it's no longer the teaching, it's all method, techniques, teacher, and the various views and opinion of the teaching. Then when it comes to Mahayana, it's the same. There are pros and cons. Mahayana, the advantage is they expanded on the teaching, because later on they have these great beings like Huining, the six patriarch, even the various patriarch like Bodhidharma, the fifth patriarch, and many of these patriarchs, they are very good. They have the understanding. That's why their teaching become different. They expanded on it. And many cultivators benefited from it. And those who have cultivated this way before, they will understand it. And that particular vehicle was able to expand on all this is because within that vehicle, there are many, many of these great beings, like Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. Most of them are very, very special beings with great perfection and understanding. That's why through all this, their teaching get expanded. But the shortcoming or disadvantage of Mahayana is the emphasis is on the higher teaching. They talk about the various very profound Mahayana teaching. They even have the Surangama Sutta, the Heart Sutta, then the Diamond Sutta, and the various type of Lotus Sutta and all those things which are very abstract and very, very difficult for normal practitioner to understand. And because of that, the Theravada vehicle followers find it very difficult to accept Mahayana because a lot of their teaching are like very controversial. Like it is completely opposite of what the normal mind can understand, especially the Heart Sutta. It talks about form being empty. Form is emptiness, and emptiness is form. And form does not differ from emptiness. That's why emptiness also does not differ from form. So all this, they find it very difficult to understand and comprehend. Then they start to say, this was never taught in the Theravada tradition. These are something that came later. It may not be the authentic teaching. But then you check the Theravada teaching, they have such word as sunyata. Sunyata is emptiness. But it was never elaborated, because this term is seldom used by the Theravadian to teach or to share. But that word exists. What they are more familiar is anatta. In actual fact, if you penetrate anatta, you will also penetrate sunyata. It's no different. In fact, anatta is a very, very beautiful awakening. A term that the Buddha used so beautifully. It's from anatta that you will realize sunyata. Without realizing anatta, you cannot understand sunyata. Sunyata means emptiness. But this emptiness is very profound. The meaning is very deep. It doesn't mean nothingness. Doesn't mean empty of everything. No. Its deep meaning is empty nature of existence. Yeah, ultimately, it's not so real, not what you think. Is empty of essence, empty of a permanent unchanging entity that you tend to cling onto, grasp onto, and hold onto, and say, this is me, this is I. Therefore, all this can be mine. So when it comes to this particular understanding, you need to awaken to it, otherwise you cannot understand. Then for my nature, I'm not interested in whether it's Theravada or Mahayana, because these are divisions created by living beings or cultivators who don't have the clear understanding. So what is more important is we need to do away with the division and come as a follower of the Buddha, traditional devotee of the Buddha. Means we cultivate the teaching. We don't create division unnecessarily. But society is such. Yeah? That's why you see, if I come to Wu Ping Jingse, which is a Mahayana center started by Miss Lee's teacher, Poyen Zhanglong, and he is the direct descendant of Xu Yun Lao He Sang. So Master Xu Yun is very famous. So even Xuan Hua, they are also the first line of disciple. And Yin Sun Fa Si and many of these Mahayana great masters, they came from that tradition of Xu Yun. We need to understand all this, and in order to avoid controversial and argument and misunderstanding, that's why you come to an understanding why my puja, I started off with the Mahayana salutation as well. We pay respect to our original teacher, Sakyamuni Buddha. That's why we chant Namo Bun Si Sakya Muni Pho. Then because Kuan Yin, the nature is so beautiful, so unique, full of love, compassion and wisdom, and is very well respected in the Mahayana tradition and even in this temple, Wu Ping Jingse. You look at the statue behind. Which is more prominent, Kuan Yin or Sakyamuni? Which is more prominent? Have some response. Kuan Yin is more prominent. You have a full Kuan Yin statue there, whereas Sakyamuni is just one poster at the back. That's why we recite Namo Bun Si Sakya Muni Pho. Then after that, Namo Kuan Si Ying Pu Sa. We have a lot of our Kayamitas, we had affinity. Some have great affinity with Kuan Yin Bodhisattva. And Kuan Yin is a very, very beautiful and unique being, full of love, full of compassion, wisdom, and all those things. So when you chant the salutation, then later on you include all the Buddhas and Bodhisattva. Then after that, I combine it with the traditional Theravada tradition. That's why we chant the salutation to all Buddhas. Arahang Samma Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. So this is salutation to all the Buddhas. Then second one is salutation to the teaching, to the Dhamma. That's why Swakato Bhagavata Dhammo San. And all these things. Then the third one is salutation to the Sangha, Supatipanno, Bhagavato, Savaka Sangho, and all those things. This is to remind us of the original authentic Pali chanting, which is the salutation. Then we continue with our taking of refuge and the renewal of precept. Then we pay respect to Triple Gem. So this one will do away with tradition. Means from one, we move on to connect to the next. Then after that, we study whatever sutta that has the authentic teaching. In fact, whatever Mahayana sutta that cannot be explained through the Theravada understanding is not the authentic Sutta. And that itself is a very important point to note, to understand. If you cannot explain it through the Theravada understanding, then that sutta is not the authentic Mahayana sutta. When I mention it, I don't mean the limited understanding of a traditional Theravada practitioner. I hope you understand. What I mean is, a real practitioner, you can call yourself Theravada or whatever, but after that being, the former mind has the realization, he will be able to comprehend the Mahayana teaching. It's no different. Basically, it is from the same Dhamma that arises. That's why you look at the Diamond Sutta, it's very clearly explained. The Diamond Sutta is a very unique sutta. If you go through that teaching, there are, I don't know how many chapters, I forgot already. 32. But do you realize one thing? There is no teaching inside there. There is no teaching inside there. The Diamond Sutta explains to you how you should develop the cultivation. Your cultivation must reach that level of realization. Because this is the sutta that explains the cultivation of the great beings, the Bodhisattva cultivation. That's why it points towards the cultivation of no mark of a self cultivating, no mark of living beings to save, no mark of life, no mark of Dhamma. And this is what Heart Sutta also teach. In true emptiness, there is none of all this. So essentially, basically, the teaching is the same. Except it explains to you many things that is associated with this type of cultivation. And the sutta is so beautiful, even though there is no real teaching. But for those who understand, they can expound to you the teaching behind. How all this cultivation can bring about that understanding, that realization. Then when you cultivate according to that, for those who have attended the class before, you will know the Diamond Sutta that we covered. The field of merits is completely different, beyond your comprehension. When you cultivate the normal sainthood way and the Diamond Sutta way, it's world over different, completely different. That's why the perfection of the 10 perfection of paramita to realize Sammasambuddhahood, in order to fulfill that perfection, you have to cultivate following Diamond Sutta teaching. Without that, there is no way you can realize it, you can fulfill it. But the moment you can have that understanding and cultivate according to Diamond Sutta, your nature becomes very different. It can leapfrog and develop the perfection very fast. Then you will start to understand why you have to commit yourself to the four basic vows of the Bodhisattva, to walk the Bodhisattva way. Then why you need to keep the pure precept, the three sets of pure precept which arise from the advice of the Buddha. And all this, they become very clear to the cultivator and the practitioner. Okay, so this is the part, I hope, with today's sharing, it can clear up many misunderstandings, so that from now onward, you don't have to worry about whether it's Theravada or Mahayana. Don't try to create unnecessary division or argument leading to further misunderstanding and all those things. Then you can like I said, make full use of whatever traditions teaching to help you develop the understanding. Use it. Whatever you cannot understand, have an open mind. Don't use your limited knowledge to comment or argue and do all this, which may lead to karmic negativity without you knowing it. Yeah. So, hopefully with this, when people ask about these two things, you just say, never mind. There is no difference. Both came from the same teaching. So let us not discuss all this. What is more important is the teaching from both traditions, whether they can benefit you or not. If they can benefit you, use it. Why do you want to argue about it? Why do you want to doubt it? Don't. In fact, the best is take the best from both sides. Yeah. So what is weak on the Mahayana side is, I haven't explained, is they teach you mainly the higher teaching, the sutta and all those things, the very abstract thing, like all the Zen saying, analogy and all those things, like the Six Patriarch Platform Sutta, the famous poem, then the analogy of the flag and the wind and all those things. And many other Zen stories. But what they lack is the foundation teaching, the essence of the Buddha's teaching that start from the Four Noble Truths. Then the spin-off of the essential Dhamma. And that one, not to say Mahayana don't have, they have, but not stressed upon, not dwell into, and not taught. If you don't believe me, you go to Mahayana temple, you see what you learn. First thing they ask you to do is sweep floor, clean toilet, do all those things. They help out everywhere. You don't have the patience, don't have the understanding, you cannot understand. Then every day chanting. Then once a while, they got sutta class and all those things. But these sutta class are very difficult to understand. That's why I had a lot of Dhamma friends who later on came and talked to me. They are Mandarin educated, so they joined the Mahayana tradition. But when they are there, they couldn't understand the true teaching, the basic teaching. But after attending my class, or after talking to me, whether through meals, which can be lunch or dinner or even breakfast, just through talking, or sometimes listening to the Dhamma sharing, they learn so much. They say, these are the teaching that is being taught and related to life, and yet they can't learn it when they are with the Mahayana tradition, because all the essential Dhamma, they are not stressed upon. They are not really taught. Like the four foundations of mindfulness, the seven factors of enlightenment, the five spiritual faculty, they have, but never taught. It's not a, like Theravada tradition, you start with all those teaching. How from the Four Noble Truths, the rest of the teaching spin off from there. Then the Theravada tradition, the Sutta, they have a lot of teaching on the essential Dhamma. So that foundation is very important. Like you want to build any building, you need a very strong foundation. It is from there the whole construction can come about and become very stable. So this foundation, the authentic teaching is still with Theravada tradition. But the interpretation of it, the understanding of this teaching is lacking. So to really understand this, you really need those who has gone the higher realization, the higher cultivation to explain it to you. Otherwise, it's very difficult. So you will now understand that both Theravada and Mahayana, they have their pro and con. So you know how to take in both the good aspect of each tradition, then you will stand to benefit the most. Then you will progress beautifully. That's why I have an open mind. That have sincerity, have faith. then just cultivate, persevere. Don't try to know. Don't even want to argue. No point. Right and wrong is for the egoic mind. It's not the mind of a cultivator, understand? The mind of a cultivator has to transcend duality. It has to go beyond right and wrong. Me and others. Because that sakkayaditi, self-delusion, is very powerful. That's why you have to go beyond duality, beyond form, beyond mind, to realize that nature within. Otherwise, you cannot understand all this teaching. Teaching is not abstract. Appear abstract because you don't understand. You don't have the ability to understand, to insight into it, to liberate. Where you fail to understand your true mind, your true nature, and you don't know how to silence your mundane mind to realize that true mind. And without that true mind, you cannot cultivate. Because without silence, there is no sati. That's why sati is awareness before the knowing, before the arising of thought. When thought is active, there is no silent mind. There is no sati, there is no meditative mind. Then you cannot realize the true mind, the true nature. Then how can you see things as they are? Then your mundane mind, your thinking mind, your conditioned arising mind, they are so, what they call, powerful. They continuously arise and cause delusion in you, developing all the self-delusion to condition you to grasp, cling, and give meaning to the phenomenal world, to the five aggregate of form and mind, which is consciousness and its content. That's why the phenomenal world is a world of consciousness, not what you think. Then you fail to see their characteristic, their impermanent suffering state, non-self or empty nature characteristic, not a permanent unchanging entity characteristic. All this because you fail to penetrate. That's why you are limited to thought. And through thought, you create views, opinion, knowledge, ideas. And these are all thought-based. It cannot lead to awakening. It cannot lead you to an understanding that is beyond thought, beyond mind, which is the true Buddha Dhamma. So all this, you have to develop the understanding. Then when you understand, you will know what to do. Your focus is very different. It's not about right and wrong anymore. It's not about debating or criticizing. Why do you want to associate with a particular tradition? To be a true follower of the Buddha, or to be worthy of the Buddha, to be called a Dhamma practitioner, or a true devotee of the Buddha, you must at least understand his teaching and heed his advice, follow his advice to avoid all evil, do good, and purify the mind. And that is what the teaching is all about. That's what the cultivation is all about. If you do that, you are cultivating the mind, training the mind to be mindful, to be constantly aware, to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path, which is avoiding all evil, do good, and purify your mind. And these are the key understanding that you need to have. Then all the other things are not important, not relevant. Then you realize you are beautiful, you are at peace. You no longer have this division in your mind to cling on to any tradition. Then whatever tradition come, you can just understand, and you can have joy, love, tranquility of mind, stillness of mind, clarity of mind to understand all this and explain it to those who have the condition to listen. Then you can be a true blessing to all of humanity. Okay, so with this, I will start the sharing. You can rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. It will make you a complete Kayanamita, cultivating with understanding. So hopefully from now onward, don't be affected by all this so-called Theravada or Mahayana or Vajrayana type of argument, not important. Okay? Yeah. Now we turn to page 272. We are at the Sutta part. Hearing the verse, Fata was remorseful and he said, from now onward, or from now on, I will respect everyone. Your disciple recites the Dhamma Flower Sutta, but has not yet understood its meaning. His mind often has doubt. High Master, your wisdom is vast and great. Will you please explain the general meaning of the sutta for me? See? When you become what they call humble, when you humble down, your ego is no longer as strong as it used to be. So hearing the verse, Fata was remorseful. Remorseful means what? Regret, isn't it? Huh? And then he said, from now on, I will respect everyone. Why did he say that? Huh? Why did he say, from now on, I will respect everyone? Huh? Anybody want to try? You cannot remember the previous Sunday. When he bowed, what did he do? Ah, his head touched the floor. Then what happened? The six patriarchs immediately knew, reprimanded him. Then after he was reprimanded, he came to realize, yeah, because he has this thought which is egoic. He doubt six patriarchs is what the people said. Because he thought he has recited what sutta? Huh? Ah, Lotus Sutta or the Dhamma Flower. Lotus Sutta, the other name is what? Dhamma Flower, Adornment Sutta. He has recited 3,000 times, you know, so he thought his merit is far more than the six patriarchs. But then when the six patriarchs reprimanded him and explained a few things, then he realized where he went wrong. That's why I do not have this egoic mind, thinking that you know better. In fact, if you truly penetrate the Dhamma and you have the full understanding, finally you will come to a realization, you are nothing, you are nobody. Do you understand? Yeah? I write down on the board. When you can realize this, you become beautiful. You are nothing or nothing, and you are nobody. So you can realize this. You are beautiful. Means you have the Dhamma. A lot of people will find this very funny. If I am nothing and nobody, then who is cultivating? Who is enlightened? Do you understand? So, do you want to answer me? When you are nothing and you are nobody, then who is cultivating? Who gets enlightened? Then what for? Go and learn the Buddha Dhamma. To finally come to the understanding that you are nothing and you are nobody. But the beauty of the teaching lies there. When you are nobody and you are nothing, you are at the same time everything. Because it's not you anymore. It's the oneness understanding. The sudden understanding. Because that former mind was never you. That's why you are nobody. You are nothing. That former mind was never you. But you are the oneness. You are the essence. You are the true nature, original nature, the source of all things. That's why you become beautiful. Yeah. Can follow, huh? Good. Sadhu. Then Fatha have this understanding. Then he said, your disciple recite the Dhamma Flower Sutta. Miao Fa Lian Huan Xing. But has not yet understood its meaning. Means, although he recites 3,000 times, you know, he still haven't got the understanding of what that sutta is. That's why he humbled himself down, lower his ego. Then through humility, he asks. His mind often has doubt. Actually, he himself knew that he hasn't really understood. That's why he still got doubt. And doubt is a mental hindrance. Then he requested nicely from Master Hui Ning. He said, Hi, Master. Your wisdom is vast and great. Will you please explain the general meaning of the sutta for me? So he dare not request for the full meaning. He just contented with general meaning. Means he realized he didn't have any understanding at all of what this Lotus Sutta is all about. Yeah, what he understands is just words, like parroting, chanting. You know. Then the master said, this is the part you have to understand. Dhamma penetration. The Dhamma is extremely penetrative or penetrating. But your mind does not penetrate it. So this part is very beautiful, because this Fatha is using what mind? The material mind. That's why the Dhamma is very beautiful, according to Hui Ning. Is it? Dhamma penetration. The Dhamma is extremely penetrating. But your mind does not penetrate it. That's why you cannot understand. There is basically nothing doubtful in the sutta. See? The sutta is complete by itself. The doubts are in your own mind. So this is the mundane mind. That is still deluded. Don't have the clarity, the awakening. You recite this sutta, but what do you think this teaching is? So that is the question he posed to Fatha. Then Fatha said, these students' faculty are dull and deep. So now he admits already. He admits it. Like very charmed, dull and deep. Since I have only recited it by, what is the meaning of this word? R-O-T-E. What is it? Is it memory? Check the Google. Google this word. R-O-T-E. Well, his English is so deep. Nobody understand this word. What is the meaning? Memorize. That's why I say must be memory. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah, very good. So, he said, since I have only recited it by memory, how to pronounce that? Never mind. By memory. How could I understand his teaching? See? Fatha now different. He don't want to argue anymore. He just humbly want to understand the teaching. The master said, I cannot read. But if you take the sutta and read it once, I will explain it to you. Strange or not? Well, Hui Ning is illiterate. He said, but if you read it to me, I can explain to you. Just like the bhikkhuni. The bhikkhuni asked him the word. He said, I'm not illiterate. I don't know how to read. You are illiterate. And yet you tell me you can explain to me the teaching, is it? Is it how extraordinary? Then Hui Ning replied, understanding the teaching is not understanding the word alone. Understand not? It's understanding the true meaning of that teaching. Where the words are concept, words that point towards the truth. The understand. But if you already awaken from that word, you will understand. It's exactly the same as what I used to share with you all, remember? After that person has realized, he can describe his understanding in whatever manner, may not even follow the textbook or the teaching. But for those who have awakened, they will understand what he say, and they will know, yes, this person has realized. He don't have to use the same essential Dhamma word, the scriptural description. No, he can use his own word, because that understanding is very different, very, very different. It's just like the analogy I used to give to you all. Let's say you haven't been to KLCC, our KLCC, the famous 88-story Twin Tower. If you were to describe to me what that Twin Tower is like, if you haven't been there, what can your answer be? What is written in the book, isn't it? Correct? Used to be 88-story Twin Tower with a link bridge in Kuala Lumpur, highest in the world at one time when it was built. That's what you can say. Then if I ask you, have you been there? If you happen to be there before, then you can answer. Otherwise, you cannot. You cannot explain beyond that. But if you have realized it, you have been there, then very easy. Whether you've been there through LRT, or you take a taxi there, or you go there by bus or whatever, at least if you have been there, you will have seen certain aspect of the Twin Tower. Understand? Then the first thing you see if you reach the main entrance is, of course, KL Surya. Then I ask you, what do you see inside? Did you walk in? If you have not been there, you have not realized. You cannot describe, understand? But if you have been there, he can describe, yeah, the taxi guy took me there. And when I saw the KL Surya, KLCC Surya, he told me this is the Twin Tower. Then I walked in, I saw the shop outlet, the escalator. Then it took me towards the end with a lot of food outlet. Then I can see many stories up. Then the aircon, you can describe that. The food outlet, you can describe that. Then the fountain at the back, you can describe that. But you have realized it, you have been there. And everyone can describe it differently. Because some arrive through the parking, they drive themselves down, the basement parking, and how they come out, they can tell you. But everyone can be describing it differently. Just like those who went by LRT. They say after the LRT station come out, you have to clear the gate, then you have to walk a short distance before you reach KLCC. Then you have a choice to come out or go into the mall and all those things. It means that person has been there. But you must have somebody who has completely understood what KLCC is. Then only he can know, yes, this person has been there. No matter where you describe, he knows, because he already has full understanding of the whole thing. But if you just like the sainthood way, or the what they call the arahant way, you may realize it through your own cultivation, your own way. Then you can only describe that aspect of the realization. Understand that? Then when other people mention that, no, when I went there, it was not like that. Where got LRT, is it? Well, I straight away reached the main gate, the main entrance, the taxi and all those things. Then I went in. Maybe he only saw that part, which he came to understand. So this is, in a way, quite similar as an analogy, so that you understand. So after that form and mind awakened, he can describe in his own or her own words what has been realized. The moment he or her described, the enlightened one who had gone through the whole thing, he will understand that, yeah, this person been there before, realized that awakening before. That's why he can describe it using his own words. Even as an illiterate who doesn't have any education, he can still describe it. You remember what Hui Ning told the merchant who chanted the Diamond Sutta? He was curious and asked the merchant, "What was it that you are chanting?" He said. Then he was very amazed. He knew Hui Ning was illiterate, woodcutter, doesn't understand anything. And he was very surprised why Hui Ning asked him such a question. He said, "This is a very profound sutta, Mahayana sutta. It's called the Diamond Sutta. How come you are interested?" So Hui Ning just tell him, when you recite to the point, the mind must have no dwelling. My mind become greatly awakened. Like I can understand the meaning very clearly, very deeply. So this merchant knew this guy must be gifted. Oh. Then from there, he asked him where he heard this teaching. He said it's from the fifth patriarch up in the north. Then he decided to go. He said, "Can you tell me how I can go there and meet up with this teacher or this monk so that I can learn from him?" So that merchant was really excited and amazed. He said, "Yeah, no problem. I can sponsor your trip and all those things." Then arrange for the mother to be taken care of. Then he went. And when he went, the moment he met the fifth patriarch, the fifth patriarch asked him, you remember the dialogue that transpired between the two? Illiterate, you know, doesn't know the Dhamma. You know. But when the fifth patriarch asked him, "Where are you from?" He said, "From the south." "Oh, south, uneducated barbarian." "Then why are you here for?" His answer is so dramatic and so very powerful. He told the fifth patriarch, "I'm here to seek Buddhahood, nothing else except Buddhahood." The fifth patriarch was so surprised. "Oh, you're a southerner, illiterate, and yet you want to seek Buddhahood." So he said, "Do you think you stand a chance?" The way Hui Ning replied was so beautiful, because from his past he knew. He said, "In physical form, there are north and south. But as far as the nature is concerned, Buddhahood is concerned, there is no difference. Everyone has that nature." Oh, then the fifth patriarch knew, hey, this guy is gifted. He said, "Okay, you talk too much. You go to the kitchen." He straight away assigned him there. So those who have the awakening and the understanding, the moment they speak, the enlightened one will know. They will understand them. So this part, make a note. Then we go on. That's why the master said, "I cannot read. But if you take the sutta and read it once, I will explain it to you." So Fata recite loudly until he came to the analogy chapter. The master said, "Stop. This sutta fundamentally is based on the principle underlying the causes and conditions of the Buddha's appearance in the world. None of the analogies spoken go beyond that. What are the causes and conditions?" Then he said, "The sutta say, all Buddhas, the world honored one, appear in the world for the causes and conditions of the one important matter. The one important matter is the knowledge and vision of the Buddha. Worldly people, deluded by the external world, attach themselves to marks, and deluded by the inner world, they attach themselves to emptiness. If you can live among marks and yet be separate from it," this is a very powerful statement. You make a note. "You can live among marks and yet be separated from it. then you will be confused by neither the internal nor the external. So this is just like the lotus analogy. Because the conditioned world recognizes mark, recognizes relationship. The form and mind in the conditioned world is real, subject to karma. There is such thing as birth, old age, sickness and death. That's why when you live life within the conditioned world, you live within the mark. Understand? You cultivate within the mark, like the lotus in the lotus pond. From the lotus pond, the dirt, the conditioned world, the existential world, where all the dirty things, evil roots are all there. From there, it can rise above and stand above the world, the lotus pond. That's why here is the same. You can live among the marks, mark of a self, mark of living being, mark of Dhamma, mark of life or living, and yet be separated from it, then nothing will confuse you. Whether internal or external, the phenomenal, you will not be deceived and deluded. Because you can live within the world of mark and yet be separated from mark. Because you have the true understanding, the awakening. That's what Heart Sutta is all about. In true emptiness, all these don't exist. But in life, they exist. That's why this form of mind, your segmented life that you come, is subject to karma. You cannot play a fool with it. You cannot say, oh, I use my true mind to act. There is no karma. You go and try. That form and mind is not you. That one is subject to karma. That one recognizes relationship. You cannot just say, it's just a form and mind. I can kill. Nobody inside there. He know you, he know me. If you think like that, you don't have the understanding. You are being deluded. That's why Fata cannot penetrate. Because he got a lot of doubt. And in fact, a lot of Theravada practitioner has this same problem. When you talk about non-self, empty nature and all those things, they cannot comprehend. You're on the one side, he heard the Buddha say, you are born of your karma, heir to your karma, conditioned and supported by your karma, and you are what you are because of your karma. The Buddha said, I exist, born of my karma, heir to my karma, conditioned and supported by my karma, and I am what I am because of my karma. Why you say not me, non-self and all those things? So to them, it appears contradictory. So what is your understanding? Did the Buddha lie? The Buddha didn't lie in it. So can you explain why the Buddha didn't lie? Can you explain? Because when he say, you are born of your karma, heir to your karma, conditioned and supported by your karma, and you are what you are because of your karma, what is he referring to? Who is the entity that he is referring to? That one came from the karmic nature. But he is referring to your form and mind, understand? Or? The form and mind is born of karma, it's correct. But the form and mind, the Buddha said, it's not you. That's why that is the awakening one, the penetrative. When you realize the Dhamma, when you awaken, you realize this is condition arising. Dependent originating. The form and the mind, both are not real. Because they are dependent originating, condition arising. That's why they are impermanent. Dependent on condition, they arise. When condition cease to be, it cease to be. So who are you? What are you? This form and mind, when the consciousness are separate, you die. When they arise and pass away, all the aggregate which you have already in your meditation experience, did you die? Feeling come and go, pleasant become unpleasant. Did you die? You didn't die in that. Thought arise and pass away. You didn't die. So the thought is not you. Feeling is not you. Perception is not you. And this is very clear. If they are not you, then who are you? What are you? Then how did it arise in you? And this is what the teaching is all about. That's why you have to silence your mind through meditation, through sati. Then awaken to it. Realize it. This is what Paticca Samuppada is all about, dependent origination. When you silent, you meditate, you will see how they come to be, like the Satipatthana Sutta, how the unarisen mental hindrance comes to be. Then how the arisen mental hindrance cease to be. The unarisen come to be, sorry. Then the arisen cease to be. You will see them. Then you realize it's all dependent originating. No permanent unchanging entity behind. This is what meditation is all about. Not note this, note that. Focus on this, focus on that. All the doing is not the meditation. The meditation is silently just aware. And realize all this through the awareness. Where your physical form has the senses. Then there is a consciousness that can make contact. Then upon contact, if you are mindful, you just aware, then you will understand what arises. Then it's not a one-dimensional dependent origination. Not upon contact, feeling arise. No. Together with feeling, so many things arise. And without wisdom, yoniso manasikara, straight away it conditions craving, then it will condition grasping, clinging, becoming, then you become that. You remember Brother Pang at the Thursday class? He asked me that question. He said, Brother, this dependent origination, I have gone through it many times. But I cannot do anything. So fast, is it? Upon contact, straight away suffering already. Reaction already. How to see? Can. If you have the stability of mind, well, you can be at the moment of feeling. Feeling will remain pure feeling, where there is no self-delusion. But before you have that, it will become craving. Then when it becomes craving, you cannot cut, you cannot stop. Because this dependent origination is a continuous link. You can only come to the understanding if you continue to silently aware and follow the four foundations of mindfulness teaching to realize it clearly. Means to see it in the meditation. That this is really dependent originating, not what I think. Exactly like the Buddha's explanation in the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta. That's why after the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, he continued with the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, the Sutta on non-self or empty nature of existence. All the five ascetics become arahant straight away. That's why it's very powerful. Anatta. Empty nature, non-self nature, not a permanent unchanging. Just through that realization, you awaken. And the five ascetic was not meditating. They were just listening attentively. And just that right view, the understanding, because also their past cultivation, they have their parami. That's how it can happen. Okay? So this is what meditation is all about. Not what do you originally thought. Sorry, the word should be what you were originally taught by others. Well, those type of noting, concentrating, focusing and doing, they are not the real meditation. The real meditation, you don't use thought. You just aware, silent. And that silent mind, which is the meditative mind, which is your true mind, will understand. It will awaken to it. But for you to have that ability to be silent, your spiritual faculty has to be very strong, very stable. That's why that mindfulness has to be very stable. And the reason why it's not stable is because of your wrong view, your delusion, that condition, your five mental hindrance. And these mental hindrances are so powerful, they constantly hinder you from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner mindfulness. That's why throughout the day, living beings are hardly mindful, hardly aware. If you are hardly mindful and hardly aware, how can you be enlightened? How can you meditate and cultivate? The Buddha already mentioned clearly under Dhammapada verse 21, only the heedful never die, and heedfulness is the path to the deathless, whereas the heedless are as if dead. The heedless is as if dead. And heedlessness is the path to the dead. You don't stand a chance spiritually. You cannot awaken. So if you don't develop the understanding of what heedfulness is and cultivate with that understanding, you can never penetrate his teaching, realize the awakening. So heedfulness is defined clearly by the Buddha under Dhammapada verse 23. The constantly meditative, ever mindful, and steadfast one, means you hold on to these two cultivations, you will realize the supreme, born-free Nibbana, which is the enlightenment. So what is constantly meditative? Constantly cultivating the Noble Eightfold Path. The ever mindful means you not only train your mind to be mindful, you have to stabilize it until in the midst of life, you are constantly aware, ever mindful. This means this mindfulness, the inner awareness is always there. Then you will be destined for enlightenment. You no need to worry about what people say. You just do that. And you will realize the supreme born-free Nibbana. That's why mindfulness is the first factor of enlightenment. Stabilize it until ever mindful. Then you can investigate Dhamma. Then all the other enlightenment factors will follow. Then you can use it to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. And this is what heedfulness is all about. If you are constantly throughout the day ever mindful to cultivate this noble teaching of the Buddha, which is the Noble Eightfold Path, it will lead to the end of all suffering, the realization of Nibbana, which is the enlightenment in the here and the now. Okay? So this you have to understand it clearly. Then your focus becomes very different, very clear. Then you don't go back to your old habitual way of meditation. The moment you sit, you just want to have calmness, peacefulness. Then you just want to force your mind to be mindful, aware. But you don't know what you are doing. In the name of meditation, you don't know what you are doing. Because you have been conditioned by your habitual tendency. Well, in the past, all meditation is like that. Must sit, must note, must do vipassana, must do jhana. And when you do without understanding, you are not focused. Then how can you progress? Progress can only happen when you understand. First thing first, Dhammapada verse 21. The heedless are as if dead. So you check, are you heedful or heedless? If you are still heedless, then what must you do? Throughout the day, most of the time, you are not mindful at all. Then how to be heedful? To be heedful, you must be ever mindful. And so then use it to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. Then only the whole teaching. Like so the Klang Talk is about this. You go and listen to the Klang Talk Friday night. It's very beautiful. Then only the whole of the cultivation of Noble Eightfold Path comes about. And the Noble Eightfold Path is a very, very elaborate set of cultivation, starting with right view, right understanding. The three types of right view, the spiritual understanding, law of karma, law of mind, the Four Noble Truths, which is Dhamma Niyama. And that one is a lot for you to cultivate. Even the law of karma, leading to the understanding of how the advice of the Buddha come about, that itself is a whole set of very elaborate cultivation. You have to train your mind to be ever mindful. Then only you have the ability to be aware of your evil roots that condition you into karmic negativity. Then you have to understand what constitutes evil. Then only you can follow the advice of the Buddha to avoid evil. And that is the first thing you have to do. That's why without mindfulness, you cannot start. You can't even be mindful of who you are, what you are. And if you don't understand what constitutes evil, how can you cultivate the precept? Because the evil root also you cannot be aware of. That's why you have to go into all this. Then when you have this ability to identify them, the next step is arise the four right effort to abandon the unwholesome thought, unwholesome speech and action and livelihood that has arisen. Then after that, when you contemplate, reflect, straighten your view, then you can prevent it from arising, the second right effort. Then the third right effort is to develop virtue, wholesomeness, kindness, goodness. So all this, right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood, or right living, you have to cultivate. The third right effort is to cultivate the right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood that are still not in you. Then you have to understand what constitutes right thought, what constitutes right speech. Write it down. Then only you can cultivate and put it into practice so that it can become a part of you. And this is a whole set of cultivation. Then the way you live your life, you have to be ever mindful, guided by Noble Eightfold Path. You cannot deviate. Otherwise, that thing is impossible to understand. Then when you can write it down, then only you can arise the right effort to cultivate all this right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood or right living that are still not in you. Then the fourth right effort is to purify or refine upon them and perfect all this virtue of right thought, right speech, right action, and right living or right livelihood. And this itself is a very elaborate set of cultivation by itself. If all this you have not been doing, means you still got a lot of work to do. Then after that, of course, you can simultaneously cultivate the next path factor, which is sati, mindfulness. And when you develop sati, you have to stabilize it until ever mindful. Then samadhi will come. Then with sati and samadhi in the midst of life, constantly meditative, ever mindful, you become heedful. Then you can see things as they are. The direct seeing will awaken your nature to the universal characteristics of impermanent, suffering state, non-self. Then you are no longer deluded. Then you awaken, you straighten your view. Then you can see things as they are. Then you can cultivate Noble Eightfold Path beautifully. And this is how the whole Noble Eightfold Path is to be developed. And when you come to sati, you have to cover the four foundations of mindfulness. Otherwise, you cannot awaken. Then only you can understand what the enlightened being tell you. Truth is everywhere, in the midst of life and nature. Why can't you see? For those who see, they always see. Because the universal characteristic is in all phenomena, all the time, everywhere, in the midst of life and nature. So this is what the actual teaching points towards. And when you understand all this, you write it down, then you check, like a checklist, stage by stage, have you understood this? Then when you meditate, are you focused on this understanding? That's why train your mind to be mindful, stabilize it, then use it to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. Then only there is the stability of mind, ever mindful, constantly meditate. And that is just the beginning of real cultivation. Do you understand? That is just having the ability to be heedful. And then after that, what I teach you from the first right view, law of karma, cultivate the advice of the Buddha, keep the precept, develop mindfulness. Understand? To avoid all evil. Then do good, the four right effort. Then understand what constitutes evil, what constitutes right thought, right speech, right. All this you have to have the understanding. Then only you can put it into practice. Count it until it becomes a part of you. Then the fourth foundation of mindfulness is what you have been doing. The so-called vipassana or the so-called formal meditation. And that one is only a small part, small integral part of the whole Noble Eightfold Path. Where the Noble Eightfold Path starts from the three right view. And these three right views are very important. From law of karma, all his essential dhamma on avoiding evil, doing good come about. The purification of the mind also start from there. Then after that, you have the second right view. Citta niyama means order of the mind, how you function as a human being, following paticca samuppada, dependent on. Then you must see the link within your meditation. How your mind, due to ignorance, create sankhara activity. See it. Don't react to it. Don't use knowledge. Oh, this is sankhara. Sankhara paccaya vijnana. Forget about it. Silent and realize it. The theory is the theory. The realization is in the meditation itself. Then upon contact, not only feeling arise, sankhara arise. Your ignorant contact, condition what? When you don't have wisdom, it will condition not only feeling, it becomes craving. Then the mind concord, understand or not? Through memory, like and desire. That's why mental activity, understand or not? That's why avijja paccaya sankhara, ignorant contact condition mental activity. And it moves so fast you cannot see. You still think upon contact pasat paccaya vedana. So you try to note feeling, note feeling. It's going on. The whole mind moves so fast inside that sankhara or churning, moving. That's like concording. And yet, not feeling, cut at feeling. All these are verbalization, thought-based. The real meditation, no word. They're silent. And through that silence, the true mind will awaken. It will understand what this is. Then all of a sudden, it will be there, the understanding. Then like the mind realize, then it becomes so different, so profound. Then after that, your mindfulness becomes very stable because you have straightened your view. Straighten your view means what? Less what? Less avijja, less ignorant, less delusion. Then that link, what happened to that first two link? Weaken, isn't it? That's why less thought, like we say. That's why if your meditation don't lead you to less thought as a free mind, you are not doing it correctly. But if you force your thought not to arise through concentration and one-pointedness, that is also not the real one. The thought must be less and less in the midst of your daily life. Why must you think? You think because there is avijja. If there is no avijja, what is there to think? Think is just the way it is. Think also like that. Don't think also like that. Remember what I tell you? Then why got thought? I only use thought if I need to share with people. If I need to interact with the world, communicate with the world. Then I have to use thought. I have to use word, speech. That's why the form of mind is a segmented life for my nature to use. It's not me. And when you understand this, you can be in the midst of mark and yet separated from mark. That is the meaning of the cultivation. That's why this becomes a vehicle and a tool for my nature to come and use. And this is not me. I don't have to worry about it getting sick, getting old and die. I trust that karmic nature. Where if I take care of karma, karma will take care of this form of mind. That's it. If you take care of karma, karma take care of your life. If you don't take care of karma, the form of mind suffer, become miserable. Even though not you, but your consciousness trapped inside. That's why that form of mind through delusion still become afflicted, miserable. And that is what the teaching is all about. Even though not you, but you will grasp, you will cling, you will believe it's you. That's why there is such thing as suffering, such thing as birth, leading to old age, sickness and death. And this is what the real teaching is all about. Not what you think. A lot of people through delusion, you know what they say? Anatta wa, not me wa. I do first la, next life somebody else suffer. Oh, they go and think like that. Now I rob, I rape, I amass wealth, everything. Then next life, not me, another guy suffer. He go and think like that. Then when he kill, he want to justify. This form and mind only one, not me one. not a big one. I didn't kill. Maybe go to court also can tell the judge, I didn't kill. My teaching tell me this one is not real, form and mind only. You go and try out, see whether the judge believe you or sentence you. Maybe immediately in China, what they do, 枪毙. They send you to what they call capital punishment. They kill you. So all this, you need understanding. Without understanding, you can simply let the thought condition you into this type of thinking. Then you still think you are right. You still want to justify your action and all those things. Okay? So this is the part, because of condition, I have shared with you. So it will help you all. Okay, now we go back to the sutta. So the one important matter is the knowledge and vision of the Buddha, which is, I repeat, worldly people deluded by the external phenomenal world attach themselves to mark. Mark of what? Of a self, of a being, existing, cultivating, or living life. Then mark of others. That's why there is division. Then mark of the phenomenal world, mark of life, mark of Dhamma. All these are mark. And deluded by the inner world. Inner world is your? What is your inner world? Your world of? What is your inner world? What do you do when you are alone? You think a lot, isn't it? Your inner world is your thought, isn't it? Your sankhara activity, isn't it? This is your inner world. This is your mundane mind. Understand? Condition arising mind, thinking mind. That's why you think a lot. You do a lot of chattering. The other one is what? Verbalization. You verbalize a lot. You chatter a lot. You talk to yourself sometimes. Then, they attach themselves to emptiness. Where they use knowledge. Then the thought will tell them, everything empty, why? You worry for what? You think they can be free of suffering when they use the thought to answer like that. Then Brother Teo said, not so real. Why you go and attach? Why you cling? Let go lah. Again, let go. How to let go? The person who hold cannot let go. You need the understanding. The moment you understand, no need to hold. Then you don't need to let go. That is the understanding. Not what they teach you. Practice letting go. Practice non-grasping. Cut at feeling, so no craving. Where got such cultivation on? You don't have wisdom, you don't understand, means you will grasp, you will cling, you will hold. That's why you need wisdom, awakening. Nothing free you, except your understanding, your wisdom. That's why you don't have the stability of mindfulness, the heedfulness to awaken. You can never use knowledge, Dhamma knowledge, to free you. Where you are using word. The Buddha say, anicchang dukkang anatta, no. Yeah, everything is impermanent, no. If I give meaning, I hope I suffer, no. Then not real, not me. Non-self. But when the physical body get injured or got sickness, all the Dhamma forgotten. Ayo, I must see a doctor. I must what? Oh, ayo, how come this time so terrible? Last time I go see doctor, he give me some medication. A few days I recover. Now maybe old already. Then continue to complain. Wow, when I young, my body so good. Now, here rheumatism, there rheumatism. Walk also not steady. Vision also blur already, hearing also not good. How la? Who is saying all this? The form and mind, the thought. And there is not you. That's why the Buddha say the five daily contemplation reflect. This body of yours is of the nature to grow old, get sick and die. For it goes the way of nature. It's not you. It's impermanent. It's conditioned, arising, dependent, originate. Contemplate on it. Reflect on it every day. Did you do this? Until it become very clear. Until you see this, you know. That this is only element. When you meditate, you will know. How can it be you? Then apart from element, there is a consciousness inside there. Then this consciousness, you realize, the aggregate keep on arising and passing away. And you never die. Then how can feeling be you? How can perception be you? How can the thinking, the views, the opinion be you? Then how can consciousness that arise and pass away be you? How can that thought be you? That's why there is no thinker behind the thought. Then a lot of cultivators are so gullible and so deluded. Every time they got anger or hatred or fear, you know what they say? Ah, yo, I fail again. I still got anger. Anger was never you, understand? No? That's why that Sakkaya Ditti is so strong. How can you free? But you meditate thinking that if you are a cultivator, you should not get angry. You cannot get angry. Then when there is anger, you get very affected, very unhappy. Ah, you, I've been meditating for so long. My vipassana already, the monk told me what jnana, what jnana, what jnana, and yet I react and get angry. So what is all this? This is not understanding. The anger was never you. The Buddha said, before there is anger, there was no anger. You're supposed to silence your mind, develop mindfulness, and be aware to trace the origination factor. How did anger arise? Did you do that? If you do that, you will understand. Then you will not complain. Ah, you still have anger. Oh, I came to meditate. I'm supposed to have more peace, more calmness, more clarity. Then good meditative experience. But I'm not getting all this. My meditation is lousy. Maybe I look for another teacher, another technique, another method, go to another temple. This is what your mind will tell you. Understand? And create more doubt. Maybe that teacher not so good. Oh, I heard that one very good. Arahant already. Or whatever already. So this is what gullible cultivator will do. But the real understanding is not there. That's why I say you go everywhere. You cannot find the truth. But the truth is within when you understand. It's not out of you. It's within your nature. When your nature awakens and realizes, everything becomes clear. Then no need to search. Who is searching? Who is searching? The best is Krishnamurti have this to share. I use a red one. Krishnamurti asks, what happened Okay, read this out. What happened when the searcher is the search? You go everywhere, you know, searching for teacher, enlightened one. But the truth is, the searcher is the search. You are trying to search for what? What are you trying to search? You want to be enlightened in there. You meditate because you want to be free from all suffering. So this is what you are searching. You are searching for enlightenment. This is enlightenment. And who is searching? Actually, your nature itself is searching. Understand? But you don't understand what your nature is. You use the mundane mind to search. That's why this is not your nature. This is supposed to be your nature. But instead, through delusion, you use the mundane mind to search. Mundane mind or the thinking mind to search. That's why you cannot find. I should add in the word, you use. You use the mundane mind to search. So this one, there's a word here, instead. So this is what happened to living being. So the thought take you around. Maybe go many rounds to Holland and don't know how to come back. So this mundane mind, instead you use the mundane mind to search. Then you do all the thought-based meditation. You never look within. In fact, that nature is within you, your true mind, your true nature. So your nature is already the nature that is awakened. This is the one you are searching, your true mind. But you run all over the places searching outside. That's in the earlier sharing, you remember? Shen Hua always remind you to reverse the light. Hui Guang Fan Zhao. And look within. And that is what meditation. This silent mind cannot think. It can only be aware of what movement that is inside you. Means the sankhara activity, the form and mind, the dependent originating, the essential dhamma, the three evil roots, the five mental hindrance, the five spiritual. They are all inside for you to be aware. But you never meditate this way. You use this one to go and look. Look for what? Look for impermanence. Look for calmness. Look for pity. Look for jhana. Look for all the psychic. So this is where people don't realize. And if you don't have this understanding, you will not be able to understand the Buddha Dhamma. You will not be able to awaken. Because to awaken is very simple. Search within. Yes, everything is within you. You have the Buddha nature. Everybody has the potential to realize that Buddha nature. And the Buddha nature is never apart from your form and mind. It's always connected. The only thing is, you are lost in thought. That's why you deludedly cling onto the phenomenal world created by thought, which is consciousness. That's why the phenomenal world of consciousness deceive you and make you believe that this is real. And make you believe that this is what you are. You remember Surangama Sutta? Who become the traveler in space and time? Consciousness created the world and the continent. Then who become the traveler in space and time? So fast, you cannot remember. I write it down. Consciousness created what? The world and the continent. How to spell continent? N U. Oh, N E. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Continent. So this is number one. Number two. And the. What is this word? And the what becomes the traveler in space and time. Who is this traveler? Who is this traveler? Huh? I give you a hint. Start with K. Huh? Start with K. Ah, very good. Yeah, she got it. Ah, repeat. Say it out loudly. Nah. Ah, knower. Nah. The knower become the traveler in space and time. And this knower come from where? Come from your self-delusion. Because you think that consciousness is you, understand or not? You think there is somebody who know. Who know? Because you think there is a knower behind the thought. You understand? When you perceive something, you think there is a knower behind the perception. There is somebody behind the feeling. That is self-delusion. And this knower is an illusion. This one is an illusion. One S or two S? One S only. Huh? Double L. Yeah, double L, yes, double L, correct. Yeah. So this is not a dollar sign. Yeah? So this one is not a dollar sign. Yeah? This one cancel it all. Because the knower is a self-delusion, self-illusion. You created that knower. There was nobody there. It's just the consciousness. You remember the physics experiment? The Buddha said in the seeing, it's only the seeing consciousness. There is no one to see. Understand that. So that consciousness don't become egoic. That's why how can you meditate when your consciousness is so egoic? I still got anger. My meditation is no good. Who is saying all this? The egoic mind, the I, the mind. Maybe my teacher is no good. Again the mind, understand? Then how can you meditate? But this is sakayadhiti, you're supposed to be silent, aware. When you are silent and aware, it means this knower don't exist. There is nobody to be aware. That's why the Buddha said, in the seeing, there is a seeing consciousness, like the physics experiment. You remember the physics experiment? Maybe it is a light bulb. Huh? Then there is a switch there. So upon contact, what happened? This is the battery, which is the mind. This is the battery, which is the mind. Then this is contact. Upon contact, what happened? The light bulb? You become conscious of what you see. Understand or not? Do they need a God to create seeing consciousness? This is automatic, isn't it? Nature's law, isn't it? Upon contact, light up. Your seeing consciousness is the same. Hearing consciousness, it just like become conscious of that thing. And there's nobody behind the seeing. It's just the seeing consciousness. That's why the Buddha told this to two of the in that sutta. What sutta was there already? Vamika sutta, the sixth monk that he's supposed to, the four monk during the Kassapa Buddha time who take birth and supposed to meet him and become arahant. Two of them, he taught him the same thing. We have got one while he was doing the Pindapata, the arms round. He wanted to see the Buddha. Then some of the disciples said, no, wait till the Buddha finish the arms round, then you come. He said, no, this is urgent. I cannot wait. I may not have the time to wait. Then the Buddha overheard. Then the Buddha came and saw, then knew the condition, then talked to him. Okay. Can you wait? After I come back, then I will teach you. He said, no, I may not live that long. I may die before that. So I need to talk to you. So the Buddha said, okay, now you can ask. What is it there? He said, I want to understand life. I want to realize the enlightenment. How can I awaken? Then the Buddha said, you listen. Ask him to sit down. Then through that condition, that clarity, he explained to him. He just said these six things. In the seeing, it's just the seeing consciousness. There is no one to see. In the hearing, it's just the hearing consciousness. No one to hear. In the smell, taste, tactile, and thought process is the same. There is no being within. But there is an awareness can be aware of all this. Straight away, he became an arahant. You want me to repeat? Then somehow you can become arahant. It's really that easy. It's not that difficult. When you are ready with the condition, you will awaken. This chart, I purposely go and think it out through the physics and let you understand it clearly. Every moment of sense experience is just like this one. Light up. You become conscious. It's not a being inside there become conscious. It's that consciousness itself arise. That's why at the moment of sense experience, it's just the consciousness. There is no one inside there. But when did the ego or the atta, the self-delusion, went in? Yeah? When? When you act according to? Your memory tell you what? I see, therefore I am. Understand or not? Since birth until now, I always say, I see. Then when people ask you, who is the I who see? And now we go through. Who is the so-called, the capital I? You say, because you always say, I see, isn't it? Let us go into specific. Who is this fellow? Who is this fellow? Who is this fellow? That's why if you are gullible, you never investigate, you never go into it. And this is the egoic mind that you talk about. But you cannot define what this is. So when I ask you, who is the I that see? Then how you answer? You answer, me lah, me. Fair enough lah. Then who is the you? Form and mind lah. Follow the text again. Because you never investigate, understand how? You never aware. But you come to understand, if you meditate, that without I cannot see, isn't it? Without the EYE, I, functioning, I cannot see, isn't it? And then you become gullible. My eye see. Okay? So this one, you say, is your eye. Your eye see. But you never check. Is it true? Your eye see. With eye, you may not see, you know. When you are asleep, your eye is still there. Why can't you see? A dead man open the eye also cannot see. Understand? That's why eye alone doesn't see. Then you try to be smart. You say, oh, I need the mind to see. Then you say, my mind see. Then you introduce another one. Instead of eye alone, you say, my mind see. Agree or not? Don't agree. Tell me why. Why the mind cannot see? With mind and the eye, I can see. But you say if it's the mind alone that see, then you are not right. Why? The dead man, without mind cannot see. So you think you are right. With mind, only I can see. But if a blind man with mind, you ask him to see. Can he see? Can the blind man see? He cannot see that. So mind alone doesn't see. Eye alone doesn't see. So what is seeing? The three conditions has to be there. Understand now? There must be the eye that is functioning. There must be a battery with the energy, with the mind. Then there must be contact. When these three come together, the nature's law automatically it trigger our seeing. That's why that consciousness arise, it light up. So seeing is dependent originating, condition arising. You understand? It's not created by God. It's not a being inside there, a soul inside there that is responsible for seeing. Can you follow? And you're supposed to see all this in your meditation when you have daily mindfulness. This is what you will see. The direct seeing before the egoic mind come in. You see things as they are. Means what? The pure seeing, like a baby. Without word, without concept. Just, that's why I told you during the early days after 1989. After I look at everything. I was so amazed. I look at the whole thing. I don't look at that concept of a glass or a Tupperware or whatever or a bell. No, that is word. That is not. The seeing is the actual perception of it without the word. Understand? Do you understand? When you say, I saw this table, you are not seeing. Understand or not? This becomes a concept you create in the brain. Understand or not? In the mind. And the eye is the egoic mind. But the direct seeing is just that consciousness that is conscious of this. And there is no name. You understand? See things as they are. You think this table know that he's a table or not? Huh? To a Malay, it become meja. No? To a Mandarin, zuozi. Then, what is this fellow? This fellow, as it is, got no name. Understand or not? But because it perform a function, you give it a concept, then arise. You call it a table. That's why the Zen master whacked the disciple who claimed to be enlightened when he pointed to the table and said, what do you see? He said, table. He straight away whacked him. He said, you enlightened and yet there is still table. Well, he still perceived form. Perception of form is consciousness. Whereas it's non-perception, the direct seeing is wisdom. So consciousness created the world and the continents. Means all of this that exists in this existential world, they are all mind-make. Mind-make are they. Consciousness, nothing else. That's why the whole of existence is a phenomenal world of consciousness. And when you understand this, you understand the teaching. Okay? Can follow? Eh? This is like a revision. If you go back and read your Heart Sutta note, it's all there. Last time I shared this under the Surangama teaching before, and it's mentioned many times inside there, in the Heart Sutta. Pass the mic to...
Okay, I just want to clarify the seeing consciousness, for example. So yes. We've got the mind, then we've got the organ, then we talk about the contact. Can you explain about the contact?
Contact. When the mind is there, it will make contact, isn't it? Like you put your mind at your seeing consciousness, then it will make contact, isn't it? Not only come together. Your mind is the common denominator, understand? The mind that is aware can be anywhere, understand? When it's aware, if you want to see, it's not a person, no. The form and mind want to see, what does it do? The mind will go to what it sees, isn't it? So that you can have the consciousness of seeing, isn't it? Then if it doesn't want to see, let's say a very loud vibration come to your ear, what happened? The contact go there, isn't it? Where this one, the imprinting, the sense data is stronger. So this one take over, understand not? Or while you are daydreaming. Daydreaming means what? You're creating sankhara. Eh? Or you're creating what they call castle in the air. Eh? Then somebody, or maybe Wai Hong, come from the back. Hey, Mei Xiang, He call you Mei Xiang or what? Mei Xiang, not darling, not honey. Hey, honey! Then what happened? Your castle suddenly no more. Understand not? Your Sankara creation no more. Then this one more powerful, take over. Anything? Then he said, no lah, nothing lah, just a joke. Then you get angry, you know. I was creating this Sankara creation. Wow, I was enjoying it. You suddenly come and pour cool water. That is how you function as a human being. Then while you walk, thinking, happy, go lucky. Then suddenly you prick. Let's say you didn't wear shoe. Prick by a nail or the glass or the sharp stone. Ayo, you go down there. Means what? The contact is there already. You forgot about what you think, understand not? Then that sensation take over, take down consciousness. That's how you function. Wherever you put your mind, there will be contact. That's why I say, wherever you put your mind, energy will build up. It is consciousness. Organ. Without the organ, how can the consciousness come out? That's why it needs the organ as a condition for it to come out, for it to light out. Let's say a battery, put in the reverse order, no current. Then light bulb won't light, isn't it? Understand? It's like your karmic force not there. No heartbeat. You cannot become conscious, isn't it? That's why the light bulb cannot light out. That's why a dead man cannot see. So when the battery is there, the moment you press the switch, it will light up. So the switch is like your mind. Wherever you place it at that organ, it will establish contact. Then upon contact, if you are mindful, it's very beautiful. It's just like this light bulb. You know what is chung or not? Chung. Chok. Like you become conscious. And then at that moment, there was nothing. You can be at the moment of contact, at the moment of consciousness. That's why I say when your mindfulness is very stable, you see all this. It's not a theory, understand not? You don't go back and say, hey, brother, Tio say, upon contact, seeing consciousness, no. Can one know? I'm going to see. You go and see. Without the stability of mindfulness, you cannot. Straight away, the perception come out. The views, the opinion, the associate with what you see come out. Then you start the description already. Oh, this is very nice. This is beautiful. I want to take a picture. So take handphone. Oh. While you do all this, you are not mindful. You're hardly aware. But this is your habitual tendency. This is how you, most living beings, live life. But when you have mindfulness, it's completely different. You can have a understanding. Then you decide. It's like I tell you in the morning, when the bladder calls and you want to go toilet, sometimes how you come out of the bed also you never aware, and how you enter the toilet, how you open the door also you don't know. The only thing you know is you are on the WC, sitting there. How you, don't describe that. How you undress also you don't know. Then how you in that posture also you don't know. Then the Buddha said you're supposed to have mindfulness of every action, every movement. You can only be conscious. You are not even aware. Conscious when you release it out. This, that tactile consciousness that is disturbing you no more. You are hardly aware. You only conscious that, relief already. That is not mindfulness at all. That's why I say you are conscious of life. You never live life. You never aware. You never with the moment. When you are with the moment, you can decide. You tell the thought, no, not you. I decide when I want to go. I can decide when to go. Even very, very severe emergency, you have to go. But you can still decide. And I tried it before. No, I just say no. I decide. Then I come out mindfully from all the movement, how the comforter, or you use blanket, how your hand move, and how you move it aside, then how you turn, how you get down the bed, fully aware, and how you walk there, body and mind as one. Then how, which hand come out and open the toilet door. Sometimes if it's not locked, you just push. Then how you turn, how you go to the WC, and how you undress everything, you fully aware. Then how you sit down and answer nature's call, you fully aware. And that is what mindfulness is all about. It's not a joke. You have to do it. And that is just the beginning. You have to be in that state throughout the day. That's why I say start from your daily activity at home. Things that you can have control of. Where you don't have to be subject to external. But the moment you move out of your house, you know what happens? All your other senses are engaged, especially you drive your car. You have to be conscious of what you see. Then you have to have the awareness or the mindfulness or the attentiveness to act and to move and to drive. And there's a lot of things moving. That's why if your mindfulness is not stable enough, you cannot cope with life. Well, your sixth sense don't move so fast. You're fully engaged. Sankhara arise and pass away so fast. Create so much story for you. The egoic mind is so fast. And yet, you're completely not aware. You're still thinking. Ayo, what to do? Office. Oh, when I reach office, how? Oh, red light already. Okay. Then engage. Because most living being is not mindful, not aware. You're hardly aware. Because you are not able to be silent. Your spiritual faculty are not stable. Your mental hindrance are there. You haven't straightened your view. That's why the whole of the cultivation of Noble Eightfold Path is a very, very elaborate practice of cultivation. You have to do it to experience all this and understand all this. So that what I describe and share, you can follow. Understand? If you have not done, you will be like, understand? Huh? Got like that or not? True? Then you go and ask Brother Song. Brother Song, like that? If Brother Song tell you, I don't know. I also haven't done. Then you also have doubt. Yeah, I also never done. How? Let's go and ask Brother Theo again. I tell you. You listen to the recording, it will help you a lot. Because when you listen attentively and put it into practice, that is where the cultivation come about. You remember that day Mimi at the Tuesday class? What did he draw? The Buddha? The teaching. Then what is lacking? The third one is what? Phase one is learning the teaching, understand the teaching, and be very clear. Then put it into practice. And this is where a lot of people didn't do. In fact, the first one also, learning of the teaching also never do. Because you think you know. You never write it out. You are not focused. Because you don't have the full picture. You only think that, Brother Theo has been repeating all this. I know I must be mindful. I must be heedful. But you never go into it. Understand? What is heedfulness? How is it possible for me to develop the quality of mind that I call heedfulness? Then you have to start with training your mind to be aware or developing the five spiritual faculty to overcome the mental hindrance. Have you done that? After you have done that, then your meditation will progress. Then when your spiritual faculty take over, no more mental hindrance, you are most of the time aware. And then you stabilize that. You can use a method or a technique or a skillful means like anapanasati to stabilize that. Otherwise, you continue to develop the formal meditation in whatever posture, whether lying down or anapanasati. You develop the mindfulness of it until your mind becomes so subtle, so quiet, until like no more movement. Then only the mind enters speed. Then only this mind can be developed to come out into the daily life, to cultivate the daily mindfulness. Because unless this mind is in sati, daily mindfulness is impossible. Well, when the mind is in sati, you know what happened or not? Every moment of hearing is in sati. Every moment of seeing is in sati. Every moment of smell, taste, tactile, or arising of thought or sankhara is all in sati. And that sati can see, can understand. That's why it can be at the moment of contact. Moment of consciousness, moment of feeling, moment of sankhara activity and movement. And all these are possible because your mindfulness is very stable. Like I used to share with you, it can be at the moment of contact. I use the word tuk, it stay there. No, it's not, no sound one. The awareness is just there. Because there is no more delusion. That's why that contact, immediately that feeling is there. That feeling remains as pure feeling, but it cannot move. That's why it can be at the moment of, if you want to think, it will arise sankhara, thinking. Then it can be at the moment of consciousness, at the moment of perception. When you want to perceive something, that perception that come out, although it's memory, but that is the aggregate of mind that you use. And you are not deceived by it, not deluded. Well, you know this is condition arising, impermanent, dependent originating, empty, not you. So feeling is not you, perception is not you. All this thinking, activity, sankhara, views, opinion and condition, they are not you. Then why you allow it to delude you, deceive you and make you so miserable and afflict you until you suffer? And people can go into depression and want to commit suicide and all those things. For the enlightened one, they know, without delusion, you will not go into all this. But because of delusion, it has its power. It becomes possible for living being to go through suffering, misery, even at the extent of suicidal thought. Because these are very severe depressive thought. And the depressive thought become intrusive. You heard of this word, yeah? They call it what? OC what? Huh? Obsessive and compulsive and intrusive thought. Huh? So all this, the psychiatry got a word for it. I forgot it. They got a term for it. Was it OCD? Disorder. Oppressive and compulsive disorder. Is it? Because the thought becomes obsessive and compulsive and keep on intruding into your mind because of your attachment to that incident, which can be very, very sorrowful. Like loss of a loved one, or a very bitter memory of something that happened to you before, like child abuse or what, or relationship failure. Divorce or whatever, and it has such a great impact on you. That's why this thought keep on coming back to haunt you. It's so obsessive, so compulsive and intrusive, and you cannot stop it because of delusion, because of lack of understanding and clarity. And this is what the mundane mind is subject to. Through delusion, through ignorance, it becomes conditioned into such state. Okay? So, I answer your question, very good. Okay, use the mic, yeah.
Do you mind if you can explain this concept again with our thoughts?
Explain again. You listen to the recording, why you want it repeated? We spend time on other things. Then next time you listen, you cannot understand, then you ask again, then I explain one more time. Otherwise, it's recorded, unless Miss Lee again make mistake. That means battery not enough. Battery not enough. Charging. Oh, still got light. Got light, huh? But not blinking, no. Huh? Cannot be. This is loud enough. At the back also can hear. Oh, it's like that one. But I saw the one brother Tim put in my house on. Blink one. Blink. Oh, is it? Don't worry. If it's recorded, then okay.
Condition arising. Yeah, it's recording.
Oh, thank you. Okay. So, May. Don't worry, May-san. Recorded. So, that is the assurance given. Now, you can have an idea of what this is. But don't attach to it, understand? Attach to it means what? Don't go look for it, understand? Before you have the stability of mindfulness, you cannot understand one. So don't try to go and look for it in the meditation. Hey, Brother Teo say, I can be at the moment of feeling. So you try very hard in the meditation. Oh, moment of feeling. Is this contact? Contact. Verbalizing inside there, chattering inside there. Is this contact? Oh, I think this must be. Yeah, I saw the contact. Oh, then the feeling come. Wow, this feeling really become craving very fast. Like Brother Teo. If you meditate like that, I can tell you, you can forget about it. That's why I say when you meditate, what is the advice? Don't try to know, don't try to do anything. Just silent and just allow that mindfulness to understand. The silent mind will understand by itself. How many of you have really tried that? Huh? Very good. Better let Alicia share. Then after that, Mindy can share. Yeah, these are the people who do. That's why they know. They straight away put out their hand without hesitation.
Yeah, 讲什么了啊?
Yeah.
讲 meditation 的 sati 是吗?
Sati, silent.
有一次我就在做我的 repentance 啊, because 读了那个 Bodhisattva, so 我就在做着我的 repentance. Then after that, 我就 call to my 普贤菩萨。 Then after that, suddenly 我的 mind 就好像你讲的 噔 一下 就这样子
Suddenly the shift of consciousness but no sound inside then become fully aware because it connects to the nature through the faith sada. Then after that, the mind that is in sati, it will know what this thing is. That's why she, after going through all the depression over the last so many years, 17 odd years, but the last 3 years, she was so beautiful because she has this awareness to be aware. Then she can even tell all these sankara, enough. You already deceived me for 17 years. Enough. Finish. Then straight away, gone. But these are wrong thoughts. Thought that condition her fear, her worry, her anxiety, her sorrow, lamentation, leading to depression for so many years. That's why she understood what wrong thought is. Then she realized all the thoughts she has been thinking last time was envy, jealousy, hatred, unhappiness. Every time point finger out on herself. Why my sister-in-law like that? Why my brother-in-law like that? Why my husband like that? Why my children like that? Why my good friend also like that? Why they cannot understand me? So this is what depressive people will think. How come my life so unlucky? Why is God so unfair? You keep on doing this, it becomes habitual tendency. You keep on thinking about it. Then it becomes a cocoon of thought. That's how you enter depression. Then like a tape recorder, keep on repeating. Inside that, keep on telling you. Then sometimes, you got a sense of remorse. Because you may have parents who passed away. Then you have this deep remorse. I should have paid attention to what they say. If I know they are going to die, I would not have reacted that way. I would not have said all those things to my... And these are the things that haunt you and make you miserable because of this delusion, remorse. Why? Past already gone. What must you do? It's no longer a reality. Then what are you doing? You are still thinking about it. Means you give meaning, you attach, you cling, you grasp, you accumulate into memory. That's what you are doing. All these are your scars of memory, your anger, your hatred. You hate yourself for not doing. And all this come from the egoic mind. Can you understand? That's why accumulation is the cause of suffering. And how you accumulate? Through your own anger, hatred, remorse, jealousy, and honesty, and your fear, your phobia, your scars of memory. That's why you keep on thinking about it, clinging on to it, holding on to it. And people talk to you, you don't want to listen. You say, enough, don't disturb me. You lock yourself out. That's how you enter depression. And if there is no karmic condition, good karmic condition from the past, you have not helped people before. You don't have the condition to come out of it. Nobody will come around to help you. But you have helped people before. like what Alicia went through. Then when she come again in future, there will be people who bring her to the right Dhamma. Then when she understands, she helps so many other people, her good friend in Macau and all those things, and even those friend of her like Elsie, or he bring them to the Dhamma. So this is what karma is about. You reap what you sow. Do good, we get good. Do evil, we get evil. Whatever good, wholesome action that you have developed through pure love, compassion, genuine, sincere mental intention to be a blessing to all, to help those who are in need of help. And these are the merits, the condition that you will reap, where you reap what you sow. Then in future, when you have condition to be afflicted, there will be people who will come and help you, bring you to the correct teaching, teacher, Dhamma, so that you can come out of it. So do not be selfish. Even though you have the understanding, wherever there is condition, you should play your role, because it's just a form of mind, your duty. There is condition to act, to advise. You just act, you just advise and do. Then you can invoke power of merits for causes and conditions for you to avoid the foolish, meet up with the wise, so that enlightenment in the here and now can be realized. So all these are beautiful. Okay, now we pass the mic to Mindy. Let her share her mindfulness and everything.
Brother Teo, I try to explain what I've experienced.
Very good, okay. Yeah. You go ahead. Yeah.
Yes, during my sleep, the experience happened during my sleep again. Then the consciousness understand that the body is just the body. And then the mind said, I want to do something. So from that time onwards, I understand that whenever the mind said, say the I.
The consciousness, the egoic mind.
Yes. So from that time onwards, I understand that whenever I my mind say I want to do something on my body, it's
that
my
is
mind.
The mundane mind, the thought. That's why I always share this with you all. You have to be ever mindful, is because whenever this thought arise and tell you things, you have to be mindful. That is the thought. So what is thought? Sankara. What is sankara? Sankara anicchang, sankara dukkang, sankara anatta. Straight away, this wisdom or understanding will arise. Yoniso manasikara, like what Ng Bi last night went through. At the moment of sense experience, it just know. This is sankara. Then the deeper one is like what Alicia went through. These are wrong thoughts that condition my suffering, my misery, my sorrow, my lamentation, my fear, my phobia, my insecurity, my unhappiness. These are wrong thoughts. You're supposed to abandon them. Because if you pay attention, what happens? The unarisen mental hindrance proliferate and arise. The arisen become more intense. That's why things that are unfit for attention, don't pay attention. These are all wrong thoughts. Things that are fit for attention, what are they? They pertain to Four Noble Truths, the essential Dhamma. So very simple, isn't it? So constantly be aware and check. What are you paying attention to? Is it something that is fit for attention? Like create division one. Before I start, I say Theravada Mahayana one. Are you going to think for what? Understand not? This is unfit for attention. It doesn't bring out the Dhamma understanding, understand? It just leads to what? Trying to be right. Division. Create more argument. So, why want to dwell on all those things? It's nothing to do with the teaching. Of course, you can argue with me, hey, brother, Theravada Mahayana Buddhist teaching, no? Why nothing to do with teaching? What I mean is, nothing to do with the real Dhamma, understand? You think the Buddha created Theravada and Mahayana, not? Theravada Mahayana Vajrayana come after the Buddha passed away, understand? No? A few hundred years later. It's created by living beings. He only teach the Dhamma. That's it. The truth. So this is very important understanding. So what Mindy shared with you is very good. Because when she has the faith, I remember 1 or 2 years ago when she first came, then she did the meditation according to the recording that I spoke. Because she has faith and she just do. Then she went into the silent mind, which was the reverse of what she did, the energy field, the content. She last time, past life, energy field on, concentration on. That's why he can see all those things. Then she cried and determined, because she has been looking for this for a very, very long period. The previous sasana already, this thing happened before. So that's why this life, there is the condition, then the nature can recall, then it come out. Then she went in, the faith was there, because that is the different teaching. This teaching developed awareness, mind. Then she start to understand. When she just silent, the nature understand that body is just a body. It's not the thought telling her. Then later on the thought come in. The thought say, I must meditate like that. I must do this. I must try this. This is all from the thought. So if you are already clear about the teaching, the focus is, what am I doing in the name of meditation? First, am I training my mind to be aware? If you are not, means you are out of focus. If my mind already trained, aware, can I stabilize it? Then use it to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path so that I am heedful in the midst of life. That is your focus. But if initially you can't even develop the sati or mindfulness, you cannot train it because your mental hindrance is too strong. So what must you do? What must you do when the mental hindrance is too strong? You must cultivate the opposite 5 spiritual faculty. Are you doing it? Do you know how to do it? Through the puja, through the chanting, salutation to the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha. Understand what are they. Then Dhammapada verse. What is the verse? I think there are 3 verses there about refuge. It's only in the triple gem where you can find the true refuge. There is no other refuge safe except the triple gem. Where only in the triple gem you can have the teaching. So all this, you have to develop the understanding. Then only your meditation can progress. If you don't do all this check, you are not clear about the teaching, then you will not be able to develop the meditation. Because you cannot cultivate something that you have not developed the understanding. Means you don't know what you are doing in the name of meditation. People ask you to note, you note. People ask you to focus, you focus. People say this method, this technique, you just do without understanding. Then you cannot progress. So the inquiry based on understanding is very important. Are my spiritual faculty there? If they are there, the mental hindrance cannot arise. So I have to focus on the spiritual faculty. So the first 2, saddha, virya, very easy. Like I share with you, the Buddha also share with you, through the puja. You have to understand clearly who the Buddha is, how wise and virtuous a being he is. He is the not only virtuous and wise, he is the wisest and the most virtuous living being ever to be born. Yeah, he cultivated over a long period. And he developed the perfection of wisdom and virtue, the 10 perfection, to become a Sammasambuddha. Which means he is not only enlightened, he is fully enlightened. To have such a being to be your teacher, you should count your blessing. You should express your gratitude and deep respect for the Buddha. Then what are you waiting? And because of his cultivation, his perfection, he is able to summarize all of his understanding into the teaching, the Dhamma, the Four Noble Truths, which is so beautiful, so complete, that can let you understand the secret of life, complete, both the mundane and the supramundane. Then this will drive you, it will lead to enlightenment, liberation from birth and death, no more suffering. Then what are you waiting for? So that faith will drive you to cultivate. That's why your virya will arise. And when your virya and your satta become unshakable, you will listen attentively to understand the teaching. then you will use the virya to drive you to cultivate the sati, leading to the stability of it, leading to the cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path, leading to heedfulness in daily life. If you do this, the Buddha guarantee you enlightenment in the here and now, where the heedful never die. Heedfulness is the path to the deathless. You only need to train your mind to be heedful. Is it so difficult? Huh? I ask you this question. Is it so difficult? It's not difficult, isn't it? I already shared with you, it's easier than learning how to ride a bicycle. Ride a bicycle, you keep on falling and you hurt yourself. This one, the most that can happen is you don't hurt yourself, understand? No? Means not enough effort, not enough virya. Then do it, like bicycle, understand? No? Fall down, come up again. Fall down, come up again. And then as you are able to start to have that one stroke of balancing, you remember the first stroke when you cycle, you can be on the bicycle and it balance for a while. Then only you put your leg down. Oh, that will give you confidence. Wow, at least can already. Oh, means if I continue, I will make it. I remember how I learned how to ride bicycle. One morning, I did it. By midday, I already can cycle. Not good at balancing yet. But the first 2 hours was miserable. Keep on falling. But that bike was so big. The one with the center rod on last time. Not the lady's bike without the center. That was with the center. Then I have to use my hand, grab onto it, and one hand hold this one, and one leg between the bar. But that time very small size. Use the leg to cycle. Then when I fall, the bicycle, kiap, chi, me, you know, understand? Or not? But I was so small size. But I determined to learn because I wanted to understand how it's like to ride a bicycle. Well, I need to learn how to ride bicycle. Well, I need to go to school. My school was 4 kilometers away. I need to cycle every day. So that virya drives me, inspired me. So that willpower. That's why you must have this strive on with heedfulness. The virya must bring forth the virya to strive on with heedfulness, to develop heedfulness. Then you will make it. It's not difficult. Train yourself to be mindful. It's like riding bicycle. Initially, maybe you cannot do it. Then after a while, you start to feel it that you can. At least one cycle. Understand? Then after that, balance, fall again. Come out again. Then as you try, you become better and better on the balancing. Then when you can ride for about 10 feet, oh, I tell you, that was the greatest joy. Then I break. And I feel the joy, understand? It's just like mindfulness. When you develop until the mindfulness comes, your form and mind will know. It's just like you riding on the bicycle. You cannot lie in there. If every time you got to put your foot down, means you still cannot balance. But you cycle until you no need to put your foot down, you can balance on the bicycle, means you have developed the skill, the understanding. But you are not skillful yet. So you continue to train. So every day I train. And because of that, I learn very fast. Oh, 5:30 already, so no need meditation. After that, no need meditation. Sorry, Okay, bicycle finish. So heedfulness is not difficult. Easier than learning how to ride a bicycle. First, spiritual faculty. After that, you sit, very easy to meditate. Because without the hindrance, the mind is quiet straight away. Then at the most you need to do is, you go to any object of meditation to stabilize it. Even when you lie down, the thought let it arise. After a while, it will cease. Because when you don't give it any more thought, any more mental energy, when you understand the untrained mind is heedless, think a lot. So you don't resist, you don't suppress, you don't control, you just let it be. Then it will cease by itself. It will go back to quietness. Because your original state of mind before the stirring is stillness, silent, aware. So just let that mind go back to its natural state. That's it. No need to do anything. Ah, like one of the ladies just now mentioned, no need to do anything. The other thing is don't try to know. Why? When you try to know, means your thought is active. You are not in sati. You cannot meditate. That's why I must have faith. Sada, virya, that sati will arise. Then when sati take over, you don't create like and dislike, sensual desire, you mental hindrance, you don't label it. Your meditation progress very far. Then you become very quiet, very still. And then continue to allow the quietness, the stillness to surface, to develop. Then later on, even all your object of meditation or whatever that you use, skillful means to anchor your mind in sati, you don't need them. But they all become very subtle until no more movement. Then during that time, your mind has entered sati. It has become more refined. And the mind that is more refined is the beginning of the stability of sati. Then when you come out, your former mind will know you are different already. Then every action, every movement, like, hey, that mindfulness is with you. Everything like slow down and magnify, even in your former meditation sitting. The slightest movement, even the subtle breathing will come back to you. Anywhere you pay, maintain attention with your awareness during that time, you will be very sensitive. The awareness is able to pick up. That's why you can feel your own heartbeat. You can feel your own vibration in any part of your body, even in your brain and all those things. That is the real sati, the real cultivation. And it can be done. It's not difficult. Especially during this sasana, if you have faith, all this can come about. Okay? I think it's enough for today, the sharing. You listen to this, it's going to help you. This is beautiful. So we go on with the sutta. Yeah, you can rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay. Turn to page 273. So we have gone through this one. The one important matter is the knowledge and vision of the Buddha. Means the Buddha knew worldly people, deluded by the external world, created by consciousness, attached themselves to marks. I have explained before. The mark of a self, the mark of others, the mark of life, the mark of the phenomenal world. And deluded by the inner world, means your mundane mind, your mental activity, your sankhara, your verbalization, your chattering and all those things, your thought process. Then they attach themselves to emptiness. This is attachment to Dhamma. They have a concept of emptiness, but emptiness is to be realized through an awakening, not a concept. Then the actual advice is, according to Hui Ning, you can live among mark and yet be separated from it, then you will be confused by neither the internal nor the external. Means the internal and the external will no longer delude you, deceive you, condition you into negativity and heedlessness. You know the difference between internal and external or not? External means what? How do you know the world? Very good. All your external sense object. That's why I want to ask, how do you know the world? How do you interact with the world? You know the world through what? Through your senses, isn't it? Upon contact, you become conscious of the world, isn't it? Conscious of what you see, what you hear. That's why they call it sight and sound. Understand? Then, conscious of what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel and think. And this is the external world. That's why the external world is a phenomenal world of consciousness. Mind make ade, dependent originating, condition arising, not real. And mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is chief. When mind arises, everything arises. So we choose to take care of mind. So that is the very important understanding of Dhamma cultivation. These are the pointer that you must have. Then internal means your mental world. There is no more external phenomenal world for you to perceive. The internal world is your own views, opinion, chattering, verbalization, your own anger, hatred, remorse, unhappiness. Then, of course, you know how to train your mind, develop the ability to be mindful, peaceful, aware. Then you get to experience all the good mind state, the tranquility of mind, the stillness of mind, the silent mind. All these are possible when you have the understanding, when you have trained this mind. Then you will come to understand without the thought, your true mind is there. You are beautiful. That's why you don't have to do anything. You only need to allow the mind to be. Means the mundane mind, let it settle down. Like the Buddha's analogy, when he asked the monk to collect the water. Every time you stir the pond of water, you are not going to collect clear water. When will the water be clear? When nobody cross, understand not? When no bullock cart to stir or churn the thing. And then it returned to its original state of clarity, stillness. Your mind is the same. The ripple, the wave that you see, all those movement on the surface of the lake, or when you compare it to the rough sea, human beings that are deluded, their mind is like the rough sea. What is a rough sea? A lot of wind, a lot of wave. Then sometimes thunder, sometimes storm. Then before the storm comes, there is a calm that comes before the storm. But if you have trained your mind, most of the time it's like a lake. A lake means what? Quite still, just no movement, understand not? There is only ripple, understand not? When branches fall in, or when people throw a stone, then you see the ripple spreading. Then the surface movement is like your surface mind, like your conscious mind, understand? The surface mind. It still got activity, understand? Sometimes still a little bit of wind, but it won't create wave, because a lake is a lake, understand? Unless there is monsoon or hurricane or whatever. Otherwise, it's relatively still. Then deep down, at the lower, deeper part of the lake, there is completely no ripple, understand now? No movement. And that is your true mind at the deeper level. Well, all these movement, they are conditioned arising. They are the mundane mind, that stirring, that movement. But when you meditate, your mind, as you straighten your view, you have less ignorance, less avijja, then you will think less, then you got less ripple, less surface movement. Then this mind is like the lake, become quiet on its own. Then you develop the stability of it until you are most of the time at the lower level of the lake, no movement at all, stillness, silence. Yeah. Then it can be aware of all the things that is within the lake. In a similar way, your true mind works the same. When the surface vibration, the conscious part, become quiet, then you will return to your original state of stillness before the stirring. If you leave the water as it is, it will become clear. All the sediment will settle down. Your true mind is the same. All the thinking, activity of mind, sankhara, the reaction, stirring, all those things, they will all settle down on its own. Because if you don't give it any more negative energy, delusion, thought energy, it will cease to be. Because these are dependent originating condition arising, like Krishnamurti say, how can the flower flower? Flower because it haven't finished blooming, understand? But the very flowering of that thought is the very ending of that thought. Well, you let it flower until it cannot flower, means what? No more supportive karma or energy to flower anymore. So once it finish the full flowering, what will happen? It will wither, isn't it? Then it's gone, isn't it? And your thought is the same. When it think until it's fully flower, no more thought energy, then what happens? It will wither. It will cease. You have to see it in the meditation. That's why you have to find out whether anger is you. When there is anger, when there is fear, when there is phobia or whatever negativity or mind state or agitation, silence everything and stay with that mental state. That is the best way to find out. Well, I broke free during the early day through mindfulness of that movement. Then suddenly, I realized within less than 1 minute, the agitated state, the unhappy state, the stirring that brought forth the emotion, they just dissipate. Then all of a sudden, I felt at the heart there completely still. Then there is this understanding. No wonder the Buddha say, all these are not me. The mental state, the emotion, the anger, the hatred, the fear, the envy, the jealousy, they are dependent originating through wrong view, it's stirred and it becomes what it is. Then if you allow it to be without feeding it with any more wrong view, then it just dissipates and cease. That's why I can understand what Krishnamurti meant when he said the very flowering of that emotion or that thought is the very ending of that thought. It ends, it ceases. You have to realize that cessation. Then you can realize your true mind. Then you can allow it to be. Then it will stabilize. Then you reflect and contemplate after you come out of the meditation. And it will become very beautiful. Well, you will have so much joy immediately after that when you experience that cessation. Then you realize the mundane mind is not what you think. It's not you. Exactly like what the Buddha teaches. And that is the awakening after you have silenced your mind and stay with it and witness it ceasing. It's not a theory anymore. You saw it through your own inner awareness. Then you realize these are dependent originating mind state. And this is what Sankara is all about. There's a Sankara Anichang. It come and go. It arise and it pass away. Is dependent originating, condition arising. Without condition, it doesn't arise. And what are the conditions for its arising? You have to trace the origination factor. How come every time you react and get emotional, angry, unhappy? Because of wrong view. You perceive that person with negativity. And you want things your way. These are all attachment, craving, clinging, born of wrong view. Where you fail to see things as they are. You fail to understand living being for what they are. And if you continue to cultivate this way, you will progress very fast. Then all of a sudden, one day, the thing becomes so clear, your mind becomes different. No more wrong view. No more delusion. The phenomena will cease to have any effect on you. Then you can just be at peace, happy, have this inner peace, clarity of mind. Then most of the time you are just aware. That's how heedfulness come about. Then all the teachings suddenly become like very clear to you. Why did the Buddha say attachment born of self-delusion is suffering? And what is attachment? It's no more the word. It's exactly the meaning of this attachment, craving, tanha, become very clear to you. So these are the way you can develop the awakening and the understanding of the Dhamma when you really try it out in the meditation. That's why don't be afraid of emotion and anger. Even when there is fear, stay there, stay with it and see what happens. It will cease to be. everything will cease to be. But you have to stay with it, experience it, and go through it. Then only that is cultivation. There is the realization as you go through the process. That's the reason why I say you have to be aware at the moment of arising of that phenomenon, the sustenance and the passing away. Means you have to see the moment it arises, stay with it until it passes and ceases. Yeah. So at the moment of sense experience, it's arising, sustaining, and passing away. You have to see it then with mindfulness. Then only this awakening to the three universal characteristics become very stable, very clear. But without a stable mindfulness, you cannot see all this. Maybe in the formal meditation, easier. But in the midst of life, which is the real one, you have to have this stability of mindfulness. That's why daily mindfulness is a must, no other way to awakening. Even those who do samatha, concentration, they have to release it out and go into daily mindfulness. Otherwise, they can't develop the awakening. We are all of the sankhara, anusaya, latent tendency, delusion. They are not rooted out. They are all suppressed because of energy field. Without wisdom, you cannot root it out. You cannot develop the understanding to liberate your mind. Okay? Then we go on. Eh? If you awaken to this Dhamma, in one moment, your mind will open to enlightenment. Ah, this is exactly what I told you. You understand? The moment you understand, you are free. It's not a gradual process, understand? That's why I say wisdom is you have means you have. You don't have means you don't have. You cannot learn. You have to awaken to it. So if you awaken to this Dhamma, the true understanding, in one moment your mind will open to enlightenment. It will just cease. Then you will understand. Then the direct knowledge and vision of the reality is just that. Of the Buddha, of what the Buddha has realized, it's just that. Means you awaken to it, you develop the understanding of it. So the Buddha itself is enlightenment. There are four divisions. Opening to the enlightened knowledge and vision, that means your insight into phenomena. Then developing the enlightened knowledge. After you insight into, then you can reflect and contemplate into it, then it will stabilize. Yeah. Then it will become a part of you. That's why you can use it, means demonstrating the enlightened knowledge and vision is actually the understanding and the direct seeing awakening. Then you have the awakening to the enlightened knowledge and vision of the reality. So this part is the true awakening. The earlier one is demonstrating, means it show it to you. Then the fourth one is entering the enlightened knowledge and vision. This one is after you have reflected, contemplated, then it becomes so stable. Then after that you can teach, you can share. If you don't reach the fourth stage, you cannot teach, you cannot share, you only understand yourself. You are very limited in your ability to express all this. You know what it is. You have awakened to the enlightened knowledge and vision. But you have not entered the enlightened knowledge and vision. Then training continue. You listen to the opening and demonstrating of the Dhamma. You can easily awaken and enter. That is the enlightened knowledge and vision. The original true nature becoming manifest. So that true mind, the true nature, you have to really come into contact with it and realize what it is. Then Huining continued. He gave this advice. Be careful not to misinterpret the sutta. This is what I've been telling you all. By thinking that the opening demonstrating awakening and entering of which is speak is the Buddha's knowledge and vision. Where these are words, these are knowledge. This is not the real thing. The real thing is when you realize it. And that we have no share of it. No share in it. To explain it that way would be to slander the sutta and defame the Buddha. See? You never use your thought, your mundane mind, your knowledge to express it. Since he is already a Buddha, perfect in wisdom and virtue, or knowledge and vision, what is the use of his opening to it again? You should now believe that the Buddha's knowledge and vision is simply your own mind. For there is no other Buddha. Because all Buddha nature is just the same one nature, the source, the original true nature before everything arises. But because living beings cover their brilliance with greed and with the love of states of defilement, means your evil roots, external condition and internal disturbance, make slaves of them, means you become slave to your thought, to your own delusion. That troubles the world-honored one to rise from samadhi, and with various reproaches and expedient way, he exhorted living beings to stop and rest, not to seek outside themselves, see? Reverse the light and seek within, and to make themselves the same as he is, means the Buddha. That is called opening the knowledge and vision of the Buddha. I too am always exhorting all people to open to the knowledge and vision of the Buddha within their own mind or true nature. The mind of worldly people are deviant, confused, and deluded. They commit offenses. Their speech may be good, but their mind are evil. They are greedy, hateful, envious, given over to flattery, deceit, and arrogance. They oppress one another and harm living beings. Thus they open not the knowledge and vision of the Buddha, but that of living beings. If you can, with an upright mind, constantly bring forth wisdom, contemplate and illuminating your own mind. See, this is cultivation, mindfulness. That's why he said, you have to constantly bring forth wisdom, means the understanding, via contemplation, means contemplating. Then use that contemplative understanding to illuminate your mind. And you can practice the good and refrain from evil, means follow the advice of the Buddha with mindfulness. You yourself will open to the knowledge and vision of the Buddha. In every thought, see? Ever mindful is this meaning, every thought. You should open up to the knowledge and vision of the Buddha. Do not open to the knowledge and vision of living being. To be open to the knowledge and vision of the Buddha is transcendental, means going beyond thought, beyond mind. To be open to the knowledge and vision of living being is mundane, means the mundane mind. If you exert yourself in recitation, clinging to it as a meritorious exercise, see? Greed, How does that make you different from a yak who loves his own tail? This is trying to tell Fatawa, no? Because he thinks by chanting, he has a lot of merits, chanting the Lotus Sutta, a lot of merit. So he said, if you exert yourself in recitation, means very diligently keep on reciting, Song Jing, then he think what? A lot of merits, understand? Means you would have progress. So clinging to it as a meritorious exercise, thinking that there is meditation, how does that make you different from a yak that loves his own tail? Means you are not cultivating, you are wasting your time. Okay, we end here. We'll go into the commentary next class, next Sunday. Oh, house dana. So no more sadhu sadhu. So next Sunday is house dana, huh? By Chin Hong. So we cannot have the class, huh? Okay. Then we wait for the next Sunday. Anybody got any question? Is there anything you want to clarify? Huh? Huh? Oh, yeah. Wait, huh? 31st is what day? Huh? 31st is Thursday. Oh, miss, I will be back. I will be back by first. First night. First night. First of September. I'll be in Thailand. I will be flying off Friday night. On the 30th night. 30th night, I will go down to Alostar. Then the next day, I will be in Hap Jai with my family members. Then I stay one night, 31st at night I fly back, I think, if I'm not wrong. Or first, I forgot already, maybe first. Oh, sorry, I fly there at night. So next morning, 31st, I go in, I stay at night. Then first only fly back. First is what day?
Friday.
Huh? Friday only, yeah? Oh, means the class is on. Yeah. I should be back. 27, you want it to be off? Yes. Then cancel it. Okay. So next two Sunday. What is it? No class. Definitely, I'm not back yet. Yes. Don't worry, Sister Lee will send out the notice. So I will be away on the 30th night, then come back on the first night, 1st of September. Any question? Oh, don't have question, then we will do the sharing of merits. Okay. Let us recall to mind all of the wholesomeness and the meritorious action that you all have developed over the last 3 hours or so. Then we will share and delegate this wholesomeness of merits to all beings, starting with the devas. Akasata ca bhumata devanaga mahindika punyang tang anumoditwa chirang rakkhantu loka sasana itta watta camehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo Imina punyang kamena mame bala samagamo Satang samagamo hotu yava nivana patiya sadhu sadhu sadhu. Okay, pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha Kuan Yin Bodhisattva and all the worthy ones.
Excuse me, brothers and sisters. I'd like to invite Chin Hao, would like to personally invite you all for his house, Dana, for the coming Sunday.
Dear brothers and sisters, next Sunday, 11:30, I have the honor to invite Ratio and Mrs. Steele to my house for conducting a house Dana. So there will be a potluck lunch, and also after that, Ratio will give a Buddha talk as well. Okay, thank you.